in brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust and blues you can trust. Indigos feel and white ones heal. Yellow scare and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Marge face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast,
episode 553.
That's right. We are talking about Green Lantern War Journal number 7 tonight. And this story is writer Philip Kennedy Johnson, artist Montos, colorist Adriana Lucas, letterer Dave Sharp, cover artist Montos and Christopher Sotomayor, variant cover artist Raza. Assistant editor Jillian Grant and editor Paul Kaminsky. This title of the story is No Escape. We open up essentially with, I even forget the freaking villain's name at this point that we got revealed last time.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember who the Reverend Queen's tie to is.
Yeah, just whoever that is, we assume, speaking and saying, hey, I hate you, John Stewart, and I'll see all and everything you love undone, so on and so forth. We see a guy reaching, an unknown man reaching out to John saying, let's get you home. And we kind of pick up where we left off. John is in an unknown place without his ring. He finds it glowing off in the distance. He calls to it. Some creature picks it up. He wills it to his hand. He lights up. He's in his uniform. He is in an unknown space with unknown aliens, and these aliens are unknown also to his ring and their language. He flies out of this area that he's in, this little asteroid kind of cavern. And the ring doesn't recognize the life forms, the language, the area, nothing. He flies out. He gets to the stars. John doesn't recognize the sky. Neither does the ring. Then the man that we saw from the beginning of the issue is just kind of, hey, you're having a hard time finding your way. Revenant Queen isn't far. Sorry, there's a war going on between gods fought by mortals. You should know that. We cut back to John's mother and Ellie Rose, who are playing. She says, hey, it's almost time for dinner. And Ellie Rose winds back the clock with her will. And they keep playing. There's a knock on the door. And it is Steelworks & Co. Along to try and convince Ellie to let them in to care for her mother. And she's talking back to them. She's not letting them through. You're distancing her from reality. You're isolating her. Well, yeah, but reminding her 10 times a day her abusive husband left her, her daughter is dead and her son is missing is also unhelpful, which is harsh but a fair point. And she turns them away. Lantern Shepherd says he's going to go off to find John Stewart, but he can't find him alone. So he needs other lanterns and not these 10 star fakes we saw in the jungle. Proper Ringwheeler, probably the best panel of the entire issue. And someone John trusts more than anyone. And we see a little construct of Guy Gardner.
Who looks lousy there, by the way. Yeah,
there is a swarm of, particulate that waits just outside the green construct house inside Steelworks that coalesces into radiant dead energy and repeats, I will see you and all you love undone. John's still trying to get his bearings, still can't. The man below tells him he can't leave. He says, watch me, and he gets kicked right back to where he began. And he notices that there are other people there kind of gearing up for a fight. The guy tells them they're not soldiers. They're scientists, explorers, trapped like you. They're preparing for an assault. And what are they going to assault? You're about to find out, Builder. Then the Dark Star explodes with energy. And they're getting ready to fight back. The guy is talking to John, telling him, I know in your darkest moments, you fear that war is the only task you are fit for. That's who you need to be now. You need to be the warrior, the radiant dead. We're just the beginning. This place is a battle line that must hold for the sake of the universe. And if you fail, all fail. And then next coming of Star Shroud. So for all intents and purposes, this moved us nowhere.
Yes.
Essentially.
Arguably the most interesting part of the book was the stuff with Ellie Rose.
Yes. Good. Yeah. Ellie is looking after John's mother. Ellie is a little bit creepy and everything. That's where we left her at the end of last issue. John is in an unknown place. Obviously he just was kind of gone last issue, but we see where he's at, but we know nothing about where he's at except on the other side of the Dark Star or in another universe or whatever, because we don't recognize the aliens. We don't recognize the battlefront. We don't recognize this other guy, and neither does John's ring. And John can't get out. So we don't really know much more about what's happened to John than we knew last issue. We have a new mystery character who has no identity as of yet. But that doesn't do anything for us. And then Shepard needs some help. So, okay, great. And then there is no essential conflict here between John and the Dark Stars until it picks up at the end of the issue. So this issue has done nothing for us. Now, I will say we didn't know, neither did Philip Kennedy Johnson, how many issues and everything he was going to get for this. So I don't know if he thought it was 6 and ended up changing the story and having to stretch out things a little more when he knew it was going to be more. And that's why there's a bit of a pacing change. I'm not trying to make excuses for anybody. I'm just saying there was an air of uncertainty about this series around this point. So it kind of could make sense that there is a gap here somewhere, that there things are being stretched to fill. But I don't know. Other than Montos's artwork, which is always fun to look at in terms of how I feel, I don't really get anything from this issue.
No, I would probably say this is the weakest issue I think that we've gotten so far, which is not a good sign, because as I mentioned last issue, with that complete thud of a reveal, that was a borderline tipping point, not necessarily just for me, but for a lot of people who were reading this book, that could be a big... It could be a momentum changer for how people view this book and the interest level, which also, by the way, let me go off on a brief tangent, that as of the February sales on this book, it had been 3 months in a row in which this book had actually gained sales. Now, mind you, that also there's an asterisk to that 3 straight months it's moved up the charts, and it's still nowhere in the top. It's still not in the top 100, which tells you how poorly this book, generally speaking, has been selling. But it was like a 108. I'll be very, very curious to see when the sales come out for this book, this issue, whether the combination of the thud reveal at the end of the last issue and this issue being relatively to see if there's any noticeable drop off from last issue to this, and especially after this issue with two arguably questionable issues back to back, whether that's going to stem any sales momentum that this book has. This book almost is like an amalgam of the Thorn run and the Morrison run. You got a lot of stuff that seems like it's Morrison-y in a way, because to me, just the way it's drawn and having some of these ties and things you don't really understand. You got this character who we don't know who he is, which is Lornar Light, who's speaking in all these cryptic things. But he could just friggin' get to the point and say what's going on here, which of course at some point he probably will. And I know maybe this is his first appearance. You can at least go into a second issue, but it's because of where this book is kind of like potentially sinking into the mud a tad that it's harder to just roll with some of these things. The twist, well, not the twist, because again, that was somewhat ruined by the solicits. The relatively quick transition from Ellie Rose into like HAL 9000 territory was, I think, that I don't necessarily know if that was handled the best. But like I said, maybe it's not a big deal because we already know there's going to be a problem. His creation of her, that chicken is going to come home to roost down the road in a few issues. So maybe there really wasn't a need storytelling wise to pretend that there aren't some problems going on with this character, with his creation of this character. The artwork was mostly good. There were a few panels. Again, I don't think he draws John Stewart all that well. I don't think he drew Steele all that well either. But the stuff Ellie Rose, he draws really well. The stuff in this alternate dimension or this other world, especially when he's drawing stuff related to the Revenant or the Radiant Dead, that stuff is cool. But yeah, I'd say for me, this issue combined with the big massive thud of the reveal we got at the end of last issue has completely slammed the brakes on any kind of positive momentum this book has had for me. And it's hanging by a thread, that if we have another bad issue, that this could very easily drift into kind of being a chore to read what's going on here, especially because some of the stuff that's coming down the road, I don't know if it sounds that thrilling either. Yeah, Shepard teamed up with this version of Guy Gardner, since we know he had a relationship with Guy Gardner in his universe, could be cool. But again, it makes you wonder how many more issues we have to get before all the stuff pays off.
Yeah, Matos, I think, shines here a little bit more than he did last issue because, as I said, last issue, there were so many panels, almost all of them without backgrounds. And finally, we have some of this, and he has a little bit of fun, too. This double-page spread when he meets this guy for the first time and you see the Dark Star in the background, these floating asteroids, you can see ships within them that are wreckages so old that they're sort of blending into the material of the asteroid itself. But they're still distinct ships, distinct shapes. That's kind of cool. Some of the alien designs in this, whether we're at the edge of the universe or what, who knows. The alien designs look pretty interesting. Pretty cool gun designs and weapon designs and things like that. So that's fun to look at. I thought Guy looked a little weird. As you mentioned, there were a couple of panels where Steele himself, his body seems to be morphing in weird shapes. It doesn't seem to be consistency to his build or anything. Okay. A little nitpicky on my end, but otherwise I enjoyed it at least more than last issue, artistically speaking.
Agreed.
I will say writing wise, and again, writing, scripting, dialogue, I'm okay with a lot of what's happening here. It's the plot that's the problem.
And the pacing, arguably.
Yes. The relationship between Ellie and John's mother seems to still be, look, it's going pretty fast and it's pretty clear at this point. This is a decision John did not think through well. But I do like how they continue to play this out because, you know, I've said it before and things like that. But my grandmother is affected by Alzheimer's. And she's in a town several towns away and I haven't seen her in a long time because I'm a larger man. At this point, unhealthily so, I would admit. But every time I see her, it's like every 15 minutes she goes, "Boy, you've gotten big," And that's a little selfish of me to not see her, partly because of that. But also, my grandfather died a year ago or whatever, and that's also weird too because look, there's no point in telling her, but there is a part of you that wonders, like, do I need to honor? Or should we as a family honor the woman that's still inside there and at least tell her once that her husband is gone? And that's a very complex thing, and we've had a year and some change to deal with that thought. And, nobody in the family has made a decision to say anything because it does feel kind of pointless. But also there's a part of you that wonders, look, is it healthy to shield her from reality just because she'll forget it 15 minutes from now or what? So the dance that PKJ is doing here in this issue, as well as in issues prior when we've seen this, this let's just call it what it is, this disease that his mother has been very emotional and very well done, even within the confines of putting it in an outlandish superhero story. So you still have to appreciate the actual scripting and complexity that's being built into here. And I do want to at least honor that because I do see it. I do recognize it. I do appreciate it. It's just, again, plot and pacing is the problem.
Yeah, I agree. I think in a way, this has kind of been, you can make a case the plot and pacing has been a, With the Green Lantern, with Jeremy's book being the least problematic of the three, but you can make a case all three Green Lantern books we have now kind of to a certain extent are suffering from the same thing, the plot and the pace. And this book was kind of cruising along for a while, but I think, and honestly, it had a lot of momentum based on the mystery that was being created. And because that's why I'm going to be very curious to see if that has any kind of impact on, like I said, not to beat a dead horse, but to see if it's going to have a negative impact and whatever momentum this book had had for the previous three issues sales wise, if it's going to start coming to a screeching halt, because now that we know the reveal is something that nobody, and when I use terms like this, I small n in quotes and air bunnies, I don't mean literally nobody. I mean the overwhelming majority when I say that. But nobody really gave a shit about that reveal, and it meant nothing to almost everyone. So certainly Green Lantern fans by themselves, not people who are reading Philip Kennedy Johnson, other stuff, people who just primarily read Green Lantern books, and they may read another book, but not because they follow a writer from book to book to book. That because of that, once that wind was taken out of the sails, it makes you wonder, kind of like in a way with the Thorn book. The Thorn book had baggage because of him running his mouth the way he did to start with, but then the first issue was pretty decent, but it didn't take long for that book's momentum to kind of grind to a halt and all the stuff that, you know, the minutia kind of pulled it down. I could see that happening with this book too, so I'll be curious to see how it plays out. My interest in the book in general has. It definitely has waned. It's not something I was looking forward to this book almost as much as the Jeremy Adams book up until a few issues ago. And now it's like, well, I'm not all that interested in it. So,
yeah, which is a shame, because, I mean, just last episode, you were complaining, small c, but like complaining about kind of the lack of really any meaning or, you know, good information or whatever out of the backups that we're currently getting. This whole thing started as a backup, and for us to liked it enough. I mean, obviously we're the Lantern Cast. We were going to cover a new Lantern series anyways, but it started up this title, and we ended up liking this series more than we thought we would.
Right.
So it does feel like a bit of a gut punch for it to go the way it has, but I'm still interested in seeing where we're going from here. This one does seem like we didn't just let up off the gas. We actually depressed the brake pedal a little bit and really slowed things down. So again, there's some good moments in here, good things, stuff to consider. It's just, it's definitely, look, if you're going to do a reveal like that, I think you're better off just plowing through it, you know, as opposed to, big reveal. Okay, slow things back down again, and then we'll ramp back up again later. I think if you're gonna, you know, go all in with a big reveal and big momentum, then you got to keep the momentum going. Especially if you have some inkling that you might be losing some of your audience with said reveal. Which I know Philip Kennedy Johnson is kind of hyped to, you know, return to this world and stuff like this. This idea that he had with his Action Comics stuff. But he has to at least know that they're going to, you know, even if he's not pessimistic in the idea that he's in advance considered that there are people who are going to just outright hate it, he has to at least know that there are going to be some people who have no connection to it whatsoever. And the only way to do that is to keep their interest, is to just plow forward and really show, not tell, how good or bad or whatever you want to portray about this character and how well it's supposed to fit in the story you're telling. If that makes any sense.
No, it does. And there was an opportunity, even though that thing, that reveal was, you know, a complete, almost by pure definition of, you know, anticlimax, your definition is last issue of War Journal, that they had an opportunity to move to just, like you said, to kind of like push through it by giving us a really solid, interesting issue that at the very least kind of like, okay, we turn the page. That reveal may not mean anything to you, but we can still tell a good story and you still can be interested to a certain extent how this plays out, even though you basically have no ties to the villains or the villain anymore, or when you thought you were going to have a major tie in either Green Lantern lore or a real tie that we would know of and recognize in John Stewart's history. And this is where it kind of just kind of like meanders. And it's like, so it was not really the way you follow up that kind of, you know, that kind of thought of a reveal. It's like having a TV show in which you were waiting for a reveal and you get it. And the reveal is like, wow, we've been waiting for this. And then you have an opportunity next week to kind of turn the page and take you in a different direction, or kind of like move beyond it or flesh it out a little bit. And you just can't, and you kind of give a stinker of an episode right after that. And it's like, wow, that's a good way to have people jump ship. And that's, like I said, that's why I'm going to be curious to see if it has any kind of effect on sales. On the bright side, the Jeremy Adams book moved back into the top 50 in February. So Sinister Sons debuted at 110, which tells you you can pretty much take it to the bank how much that's going to drop by issue two.
I will say, just picking one thing to look forward to, and other than the continuation of the Ellie Rose stuff that we've talked about as being a net positive, I would say, throughout the series thus far, the Ellie Rose and John Stewart's mother stuff. I probably am looking forward to seeing exactly how Shepard meets Guy and what he thinks of Guy, because the brief moment we saw Guy in the other universe, he was still kind of a brazen ass. But he was an older, wiser, brazen ass who has had the ability and the fortune, I would probably say, to allow his age to humble him a little bit, his age and experience. So I'm wondering what Shepard will think of Guy Gardner, because he goes, I need other lanterns, and not the one of those 10-star lantern, 10-star fakes we saw in the jungle, a proper ring wielder. And then he says someone John trusts more than anyone. So, like, he's definitely talking up Guy a little bit, a proper ring wielder, which arguably Guy is in any compared to any of these UP lanterns. But I really am interested to see if Shepard's a little taken aback about how much of an ass Guy may or may not be when he comes across him.
And there's always a certain interest when you have characters that have a relationship in one universe, and now you're different incarnations in an alternate timeline, or there's time travel involved. So there are two characters that were destined to be friends 10 years down the road or 15 years down the road, meet earlier, and they just completely are like oil and water, and they do not get along. They do not get along at all. So I think the reality is that I agree. The Shepard, even though Shepard barely had any time in this issue, but he kind of made the most of it. And Shepard is interesting by himself. That's one of the bright spots of this book. And so but again, that's that whole part with Ellie, everything involving Ellie and her mom. And then when Steele and Natasha and Shepard went to go visit her and basically kind of got shown the door because they weren't invited in the door, that was the most interesting stuff. It's having these unknown characters show up and kind of play, do the Lonar thing all over again, just to find out that, hey, guess what? Maybe hinting that, oh, I know you, John Stewart, again, which will hint to the audience that this character is going to be somebody we recognize, when it may very well, based on the pattern of this book, not be anybody we recognize, or somebody, if anybody would recognize it, it's because, oh, in a Justice League book down the way back when, or something that Philip Kennedy Johnson wrote, that there was this character that interacted with, you know, potentially with John Stewart or someone who knew John. Yeah. So you can't even put much credence in that and saying, oh, this character is going to be somebody we know. It's like, you'd like to think that, but after the big reveal that we got, you can't really have a lot of, you can't be nearly as confident as you normally would be that that's going to be a meaningful reveal when we get it.
Yeah. Other than that, I think that's all I got for this one.
Yeah, I agree. I think this was a pretty disappointing issue overall. So that's not good. Like I said, coming off the really bad reveal of, which was still a good issue up until the reveal, but a bad ending, a bad reveal last issue, and then this issue just kind of meanders. I think there really is a lot riding on the next issue. It's got to be better across the. It's got to have some kind of kickstart in the momentum. There's got to be something, because if not, I do suspect a lot of people who are not dedicated either John Stewart fans, or again, that small contingent, I think, of people who read this book maybe because they like anything quote unquote Philip Kennedy Johnson writes, I think this book could start hemorrhaging readers very quickly if this, and let's be honest, from a sales perspective, this book is kind of like a dead book walking anyway, based on where it's been selling. So it really wouldn't take much for this book to get the axe at any time. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. What's next?
Let's do some feedback. We probably figured we were going to be delving into some of other Monty's emails that we didn't finish yet, but he actually sent a new email, which followed up on a few things we talked about and finishing off his reviews or his thoughts on the different segments that in spin-offs and things that we do. So let's do Monty. He goes, "Hey, a Lantern Cast. First, a quick correction. Last time I said that I prefer you didn't stray too far from DC stuff when you do commentary tracks, but then I listened to an episode where you said they represented a bit of a break from the usual grind, and I really enjoyed the Alien Covenant track, so peel forth." That was a fun one, which is scary to think that movie Alien Covenant came out in friggin' 2017. That's scary to think about, which, by the way, the Alien Romulus trailer dropped. I don't know if you watched it. Not that there's much in it, but that teaser dropped today. Speaking of Alien. But yeah, that's how... I mean, we still aren't going to do that many commentary tracks, but I think generally speaking, we feel that it doesn't have to be so heavily DC if it's something we both like. If we wanted to do a Godzilla X Kong commentary track at some point, we're not going to have our hands tied just because, hey, it's not DC.
Yeah.
All right. So he goes, "Also, yesterday I listened to the Endgame trash or trailer heated. I don't remember that conversation, so I actually don't get the reference. And the 4-hour 40-minute 10th anniversary episode 347, he thinks, just so you know, I could listen to the Lantern Cast indefinitely. So a massive episode like that is always a delight." Yeah, it's not a delight to edit. Now, luckily, I wouldn't have edited that one.
Regardless, this is why we don't do clip shows as much anymore, guys, because of the segments. You know, we talked about it last time we did a Monty email. The segments, you get people on the line and you go, okay, we're going to do 20, 30 minutes, something like that. And then it ends up being an actually fun conversation. And it feels like a shame to just be like, all right, we got to stick to the time and just cut people off. And then you end up with a nearly 5-hour episode.
Yeah. So that's why, at least currently, with the unpaid Zoom, at least it makes it easier.
Yeah.
It makes it easier on that level because you have a 40-minute segment and recording at a time. So that is the benefit of that. It's also a benefit, to be fair. It's also a boon to editing because you're never sitting there going, "Hey, I've edited 45 episodes, fed 45 minutes of this segment. How much time do I have left? Oh, another 120. No, it's a lot easier because it's like, hey, if you did 45 minutes, you're already complete. You've completed one segment and moved on to another. So we'll do one more here. "To continue, interviews. Yes, love these and I'm frankly quite impressed on the level of cool people you have managed to get on board. In the case of Steve Rude, which is you, I was I was particularly impressed how he started off a little defensive but seemed to warm to Chad over the course of the interview. Great stuff. The Venditti interview was great, too, and a real eye-opener about creators versus editorial, a theme that has come up but never properly explored, as you'd need a creator who would be willing to spill the full can of beans, and maybe an ex-editor, too. Hope there are more of these on the way." It's basically John's 20th Green Lantern anniversary, which we have some plans for. "At the end of the year, it'd be damn sweet to get him to chat about how many still regard it as the absolute high point of Green Lantern. It's not like he's up to much these days. Maybe. What's my latest JSA, Jeff?" Where's my latest? I think the Van Jensen episode going hand in hand with the Venditti interview makes sense because those two are tied at the hip, and Van Jensen got that gig because of Venditti.
Actually liked Van Jensen's run a little more retroactively after speaking with him.
Yeah, first of all, you had to appreciate all the time and effort that he put in. First of all, the fact that he put so much research into something that he didn't necessarily have to do, but just the fact that he got shafted because he was so chained and so tied at the hip to what Robert Venditti was doing, and that was a mutual decision. And again, he got the gig because he was friends with Robert, and he wasn't complaining about it. But the reality is, the plans that were in place People remember that there was a lot of shakeup with Green Lantern creative crew right before those four books kind of rolled out. And the reality is that they had to, you know, they had to shift direction to a certain extent, controversially, because of the rumor that they were going to kill Jon Stewart, which I don't really think was really the case. I think it was the opposite. But nonetheless, Van Jensen never really got a chance to get his feet wet to do his own stuff. And then he was about to. And then it was either Convergence. I forget if it was either Convergence or the New 52. I mean, not the New 52, DC Rebirth, but one of those cut him off at the knees. And that's when his book got canceled. But he did kind of lift the veil a lot about a little bit about what was going on, about, you know, what conversations were taking place about, hey, were there conversations? Again, and you don't know how forthcoming, or he was forthcoming. You don't know how, if he's giving you all the information that he has, or he's just kind of being somewhat diplomatic. But he certainly didn't dodge, tiptoe around, you know, where they're just, you know, he acknowledged that there were some discussions about, he knew there were some discussions about Jon Stewart, but, you know, he wasn't with, but that seemingly took place before he got there and things like that. So I think both those guys were pretty open about, yes, it's versus editorial. Like the, I know Robert talked about wiping out Kyle being a White Lantern. That was an editorial decision and things like that. So I that's always refreshing when people at least acknowledge that, or at least make it, even if they do it in a very, you know, kind of like one knock for yes, two knock for no kind of cryptic way of saying, yeah, well, yeah, this is, you wouldn't be wrong if you thought that.
The Steve Rude thing. I enjoyed, look, so you talk about a little bit about the start off a little defensive, but seemed to warm to Chad. We actually kind of warmed to each other. Steve is a, you know, an icon in the industry, but going into, because that's the first episode of Creative Credit, and look, as slow as Creative Credit has been since its birth, getting Steve Rude of all people as your first interview to kick off that show, I was particularly happy about that. But going through in the process of setting up all of that, I made it pretty clear that it was going to be an audio interview. But once we got down to the nitty gritty, he really insisted on the visual component. So I had to kind of backtrack a little bit and look at the software we were using to record and speak to each other was already going to record the video, because heads up, when you record something like that and using software on Skype or whatever, it records the video file. It'll also give you an audio file. It'll give you multiple files depending on what you want to do with the stuff afterwards. So it didn't change anything for me other than I needed to put on a nicer shirt, brush my hair, get my camera angle set up, like all that. And I am uncomfortable being on video. So there was that. So we kind of warmed to each other over that. And I would highly recommend you guys, if you're interested, go watch on the Lantern Cast Vids YouTube channel that episode, because you actually see Steve, and he's in the interview, he's talking about, hey, I did this and I did this. He's literally showing the camera art of his from his studio. So I recommend it, because as of right now, it's probably one of the least watched videos on our channel. And that's fine, because it's like an hour long. But right now it's got 135 views. So I'm telling you, it's out there not because I'm trying to get more views, but because that clearly tells you not a lot of people know that video actually exists. So if you're interested, go check it out. But I really did end up enjoying that conversation. And you can tell, yes, he does warm to me after a little while, because at the end of it, and I say it like it's a brag, and technically it is, but it's such a great memory. You know, I've talked a lot on the show about the first several comics I had as a kid. And one of them was that Magnus the Robot Fighter and Nexus crossover second issue that we talked about in one of our famous first episodes. And I got to tell Steve that. And after everything had happened, he asked me for my address, and he sent me a sketch image, and I'll give the image to Mark to post up in the notes on our website, so you guys can see it. He gave me the image, a sketch of Magnus and Nexus, like just two little bubble, like what do you call it when it's like shoulders and up? Is that bust? Okay. So it's two little bust images, each character in their own individual little circle. And he just sketched out Magnus and Nexus for me and sent it to me and signed it and said, hey, thanks for the exposure, or whatever he said on it. I don't even have that thing framed. I need to get that framed. But he didn't have to do that. I didn't ask him to do that. He did that of his own volition. And I thought that between him warming to me over the course of that one conversation and him doing that, you know, they say a lot of times don't meet your heroes and stuff like that, but that was a really good interaction that I had with a creator, that I don't want to say idolized, but played a really pivotal point in my fandom. So.
Chad Bokelman, an acquired taste.
I will say also, just really quickly on that one note about Jeff Johns, we would love to have him on. In fact, I've reached out several different ways over the past several years and have never gotten in touch with him. So, yes, we would love that, but keep on dreaming. it would look, maybe it'll happen someday. Who knows? But like, we know people who know Johns, like, for instance, Jeremy mentioned that he's a friend. So would it be hard to say, hey, Jeremy, do you think you could reach out to Jeff for us if that's not too much of an ask? Probably, but it also feels really weird to do that. And, you know, I, as much as I like interviewing creators and stuff like that, it's always felt so weird to go through a creator for another creator, but also isn't that just networking? So yes. I don't.
Yeah, you know, I'd say it's networking. So I personally wouldn't feel that guilty over, like, would we do it now when we only talked to Jeremy once? No, but if we talked to Jeremy twice and we knew we were talking to him a third time, or we felt comfortable after we finished talking to him a second time, would it be possible to, you know, to at least prime the pump and see if there was a chance? Yeah, I don't think that would be the worst. But it is exactly what you said. That's more networking than anything.
All right, what's next from Monty?
All right, movie reviews. Well, I love me films, so it's always good to review. It's typical that I've already seen whatever is featured, but there was a lot of Creed 2 exposure. Yes, there was. I've only seen the first Rocky film, but listening to Mark's enthusiasm for the series made me want to watch the rest, so I put them on the list. That's cool. You will, if you enjoyed the first one, I have a hard time thinking you're going to be disappointed, really, if you continue the series, at least till you get to Rocky 5. But it gets better after that, too.
Yeah, I've actually been listening to some of them as well. Not too long ago, I listened to the Dial of Destiny one, too. Just because I've, you know, I told Mark and I posted it on Twitter, I finally caught up with several different films. Actually, over the past couple of days, I've been watching and or rewatching. It depends. I can't remember how much of what I've seen, but I've now seen for sure all three John Wick films. So, you know, there's that as well. So. I still haven't watched Last Voyage of the Demeter because I'm very like it. I know it's going to be a dark movie, so I can't watch it at night. But I also want to make the time for it. So watching it during the day, during a weekday is hard because of works and I only get 30 minutes for lunch. So I don't know, you know, we'll see. But I think that's probably the next on my list to watch. It's just got to make the right time to watch it.
Yeah, catching up sometimes is hard. Pre-birth, isn't that the opposite of afterbirth? Well, yes, that was kind of actually the joke when we came up with the title. Great series, awful title. Hey now. Monty snatches defeat from the jaws of victory, but real easy.
Who came up with that? Was it me or you? I can't remember. I know we tossed it back
in a conversation. I think it was Jim.
Okay.
I do think it was Jim.
I gotcha.
But, you know, as It exists because it was pre Green Lantern Rebirth. So it was specifically being, you know, the Spectre was going to be the focus in the sense, we'll be dead before we ever finish the series at this rate. But the concept was then it opened the door where we could still continue it on and do other stories as long as it fell under the basic mantra, it took place before Green Lantern Rebirth. So seriously, though, I'm actually quite a big fan of that Spectre series, even as it got more episodic at the end. Yes. Can't remember the issue, maybe third last, but it involved a berserker named Miklos, and it's a great little story. Also, did you know Helen Jordan popped up in a possible future, you know, Green Lantern Ring and all on the Adventures of Superman story, Camelot Falls from about 06-07. Anyway, it's always good to have Jim around, though I wonder if you managed to get much further as the fatigue already seems to be setting in where I am. Yeah, Jim's enthusiasm or lack thereof for that book is part of the reason why we have not pumped out much in that series. But he's, to counter that, he is generally more enthusiastic about toys, and we may have done a pre-birth more recently than we did a toy episode, so I don't know what to say there.
Yeah, those are always hard for me because I haven't read much of the Spectre series. I've read bits and pieces here and there. It's also a series I just recently completed. I can't remember. I know I told you, but it's been so long now. There was one issue for forever I just couldn't find for some stupid reason. I finally got that, but I haven't read the series, even though I finally completed it. But that's also the case for a couple of things in my collection. Like, I finally finished my Guy Gardner, and then Guy Gardner Warrior series. I finally completed that run as well, and I haven't started a read through of that yet either. So, yeah, I'm just sort of waiting till I start reading that to start listening to that content. That's what I like to do. I like to do that with some of our episodes, guys. Like, look, does it suck probably for Mark or whatever if I don't watch a particular movie fast enough to be with him to record? Maybe in terms of getting another guest or whatever, making it easy for him. Yeah, sure. But also for me, the back end of it is I just watch things when I feel comfortable doing so. And hey, that actually means there's an episode or two of our content out there that I've never heard of or listened. So I still get to occasionally enjoy episodes of the Lantern Cast. So it's, you know, that, and that's now at this point, that's going to be the entirety of Pre-Birth, because I've listened to a couple of episodes, yes, to support Mark and Jim, but I haven't actually read it. So I will be doing a proper re-listen to all of the Pre-Birth episodes once I start actually reading through the Spectre series.
Yeah, I would like to finish that in the next couple of years. It would be nice. We may have to pick up the pace, and well, we have no pace, so anything would be picking it up, but we'd have to maybe, I think we did the first issue of like at least a 2-issue or a 3-issue total arc. I don't know if it was 4, because this relates to Stigmonis and Sinestro. So we may just have to, whenever we sit down and do one, we may have to make sure we finish that arc in one episode just to cut down on the number of episodes. Ironically, we did talk about doing a toy episode when I was talking about the receiving my Amazon exclusive gold label Parallax, the glow in the dark Parallax, which is labeled, of course, the 0 Hour Crisis in Time edition Parallax, which, again, you got to love the consistency of the McFarlane on a brief tangent. They give us the original Parallax called Emerald Twilight, and they give you artwork from Convergence. This one is a 0 Hour Crisis in Time Parallax, and the cover art on the back is from, I think, Green Lantern 50 from the Johns run when Hal becomes Parallax again. So you just got to love that. So let's see. Silver Age. I don't think I've listened to any of these yet, but the fun you guys had early on in reviewing Showcase 22 and Green Lantern 1 makes me look forward to them. I always read things as if I were a person of the time where possible, so I often miss how hilarious some of these concepts are. Seagull Tom has to be a highlight, though. We like the Silver Age issues. They're a nice change of pace.
Yeah, they're fun. It's been a while since we've done one, but
yes.
Yeah. They are fun to do, especially when you have no idea what to do next. Like, it's definitely one of those things where like Famous Firsts or maybe even Emerald Influence and stuff like this at this point are probably are like, okay, we don't have GL content stuff to do, but in terms of like new reviews of currently releasing titles, but we're excited to do those types of things and we can prepare for them. Silver Age ones are like, let's not think too much. So, and it's and they're, you know, because they're Silver Age, because they're so campy, it ends up being fun.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
And finally, State of the Green Lantern Union. Yes, it's a great to see a cross section of opinions about where we stand. And I think it was here that you covered what might have been. Yes. No, actually, we covered what might have been also in a different episode.
In their own episodes.
Yeah. Which got me wondering, is there any info out there about what sort of course the sequel to the 2011 Green Lantern film might have taken? I think the general answer to that is no, because I don't think anything ever got I don't think it ever got that far in the planning stage, let alone not enough where it ever leaked, if there was. Mark Strong with the perfect Sinestro, yes. And seeing his portrayal, I feel like if they had made it, it might have taken away some of the stink of the first film, though I never liked Reynolds as Hal or Lively as Carol, so who knows. I feel exactly the same way about Terminator Genisys. I actually like Terminator Genisys. I do think the sequel to Terminator Genisys would have been interesting because you had the opportunity to actually do a Terminator movie that did not involve the traditional time travel and John Connor. I mean, Kyle Reese was still going to be there, because of how that movie ended. But the point was, it's not the same dynamic always with the time travel, a Terminator going back in time. You could have avoided it based on the new dynamic that was created, because all these characters were now in a different time. So nobody knew what was coming. Nobody had any knowledge from time travel. But I don't know. I do think a sequel could have been better could have made the stench, quote unquote, go away from the 2011 movie. But it all depends what they did. I don't have as much of an issue with Blake Lively as I do with Ryan Reynolds. And of course, if he had shut up any time over the last 13 years, then maybe some of that personal issue with him my issue with him as Hal would have faded away, since I was happy that he got the role based on who he was in the final selection process with. But
yeah, what might have been, there's a potential for another one of those. It's just, I won't go too into it, because there is a writer, a popular name, at least of DC 80s, 90s, that put out his own series of various books where he published his unpublished works. And he's done a couple of volumes of those. Some of you will know who I'm talking about just by that description. One of those volumes contained some Green Lantern stuff. I still need to get my hands on that book and then read through it to make sure that we have enough there for an episode, of course. But it definitely would be fun to talk about that. And as far as State of the Green Lantern Union, we're actually do one this year, because we do it like every 2 years or so. Probably, and again, everything is subject to change, but probably late this year, because we've done, if I'm reading this right, we've done 4 State of the Green Lantern Union episodes throughout our tenure here. 2 of them were around April, May, and the other 2 of them were around November, December. So if we were to do it, obviously April, May is right around the corner, so probably not doing it in the middle of this year. So more likely November, December. plus, it's been also easier for us because it's a big episode, and releasing it later in the year makes it a nice anniversary, easy to call it an anniversary episode as well, which has been funny, because we, you know, the clip shows, as we spoke about earlier, we're not doing too many of those anymore. So it's nice to have a State of the Green Lantern Union, have a bunch of people on, and that kind of serves as an anniversary episode. So.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. And those episodes are fun to do. Like we jokingly, half jokingly said, it's not always fun to edit. But the last one actually was relatively ruly as opposed to being unruly. So when that comes together, that always helps. So that's that. Now, someone brought up the question of Mark and Chad being too similar in their opinions, and that a differing perspective could be beneficial. I don't remember when that was. That must have been a while ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, we have pretty differing opinions these days.
Yeah, I'm going to delve into that. I personally agree, but I don't just want a bunch of cringy arguments either. Yeah, you'll never get that from us anyway. I think that Dan and Jim are the perfect counterpoint to Chad and Mark. Whenever either of them are on, it somehow feels like a cherry has been placed atop what was already a very nice cake. Right, catch you guys later. Happy St. Patrick's Day and happy birthday in advance to Chad. Thanks for ignoring my birthday. Next time, something completely different. So, yes, dealing with that, I think actually on some levels, I'm not saying it should hold more weight, but objectively it could hold more weight when Chad and I tend to be lock and step more times than not about something. Like, let's say tonight's issue review, because Chad and I are very different people. We have very different views on things, different interests. We're not the same people at all. So it's really easy for us to kind of like fork at the road very often, even though we have always are going to have some commonality. It would be real easy for us to take different perspectives more times than not, actually. So when we are almost lock in step, especially when we haven't talked about anything ahead of time in any detail, it in a way, it should be more of a ringing endorsement, even if that endorsement is a thumbs down, really, not endorsement of something, because it's like we're not coming into it from the same perspective. We're looking at it differently. And yes, whenever we have a third person on, it automatically is going to change the dynamic, because at the end of the day, you only have 2 real options. Either it's going to be a unanimous opinion on whatever you're talking about, or it's going to be kind of like a two against one, or even if it's two against one, just, and I don't mean literally like clashing, but you're going to have, depending on the topic A you're talking about, the third person might side with Chad, or the next topic, the third person might side with me. But it automatically means that, you know, as long, unless it's a unanimous decision, there's going to be someone's going to lose 2-1. So it automatically creates, you know, more of a dynamic that way. So I do think that certainly makes it interesting, but I don't think we're certainly never going to fight just for the sake of fighting. Cause sometimes you hear, like, I think everybody's seen either TV shows or radio shows where it seems like somebody's been giving the marching order, even if it's not both, that, hey, when you have an opportunity to contradict the other person, do it. And when that happens, it's just so cringy because you can almost tell that it's fake, and it just doesn't really work.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you use tonight as an example. That's good. Like, you know, I knew Mark wasn't going to like this, but one of the benefits of us having differing opinions is I'm thinking about my own thoughts on the issue, but knowing that Mark doesn't like the issue going into it, like, it's not like we talk about it extensively beforehand, just sort of baseline thoughts. I'm trying to figure out ways to talk about what I like and why I like it, so that, when/if Mark goes off on how much he doesn't like something, I don't have to go, hey, can you find something positive in it? I can explain my positive stuff out loud well enough. I have a well enough constructed argument to where Mark kind of goes down the road of, like, talking about the stuff that he did enjoy out of an issue. And conversely, and I think it might have been the Alan Scott stuff, you will talk to me and get me to balance out in terms of things where, like, I'm trying to find some positive, and you're like, well, it doesn't mean you should just be giving these people a pass, you know? So, like, you know, we'll have dissenting opinions of each other, to each other, but we're not just telling, you know, like, Mark's not just telling me, hey, can you go a little more negative sometimes? Or I'm not telling him, can you go a little more positive, or vice versa? I'm not pigeonholing us both as right. Mark is negative, I am positive. But we find the ways to be like, okay, we differ in these opinions. So how do we get each other to see each other's points of view that then makes for an actual conversation, as opposed to just going, can you be more positive? Can you be more negative, or vice versa?
Or just yelling at each other.
Yeah, that's
which,
true.
Which we are real good at not doing. So that's actually, but yeah, so I think so. Just that's just something to factor in for that. That sometimes, yeah, sometimes we have similar opinions, but at the end, like I said, it's not because we're trying to. And in a way, looking at it through the prism how I described it, and think maybe if it seems that way at times, step back a little bit and realize that, well, since we are approaching this from different angles and being in different views on this and different views on that, that if we actually have more common ground on whether it's a thumbs up or a thumbs down, or even if our general opinion is on something like it's eh. But if we still have if we almost see the same things that are, if we are looking or have to talk about positives or feel as positives, we agree on the positives, and then we also agree on what doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Like I said, so it might hold a little more weight when you look at it from that perspective, because we're not necessarily prone to always agree with things. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially lately. Cause at least speaking only on my own behalf, I am so much on social media, and Mark less so. Mark's not on Twitter and stuff like that, guys. So I'm just so much on it that I see the negative side of fanboy community, and how willing it, you know, how the listeners out there, you know, I'm sure you're aware, Mark, maybe a little less so. Do you know, man, how willing people are to tweet out not only, hey, this issue was bad, they will fucking tag the creators to tell them how bad it is. And even if it's for some bullshit reason, like, oh, this really should be a story about Hal, or, you know, because Hal's the goat, or, you know, like, whatever the fuck that is they're doing in a given moment. It is so crazy to me how willing people are to be like, this sucks, and I'm going to tell the person who made it to their face, because they need to know that it fucking sucks. And it's just like, there's so much negativity out there that I keep trying to distance myself, not from that community necessarily, or just the community in general, but like, I see so much of it that I'm like, look, if the writing sucks or the art sucks or, you know, whatever, in terms of my gut reaction to it, I something in me forces me to go, I need to think about this more, because could it be editorial? Could it be a page count issue? Could it be like, could it be in a printing issue? Like, could it be any number of whatever things could be affecting it, other than me just going, oh, the writer fucking sucks on a given thing. And it's just like, I force myself to try and think about that stuff. And I do try to find the more positive in it, not because I'm afraid of going negative, but just because I'm afraid of becoming a feral, unhinged fanboy.
Yeah. And actually, you saying that, you saying that or putting it in that context actually helps me, because there are times, and you know, and we don't really clash about this, but we do talk about it, that there are times when, and I've, you know, I've openly called you on this sometimes. It's like, when we both know you really don't like the art, but you just don't want to come out and say to you the art isn't good, and that at least now you kind of give the prism of why you tried, of why it's like you step back and it makes it easier for me, because now at least I understand a little bit more. It's not just like you're just not willing, or you want to be PC, or you're trying to pull a punch. It's that I get that a little bit more. So
yeah,
that is beneficial.
And it is true when I say things like that, though, because like, even if I don't like a person's given, using the art example, if I were to sit here and let's say I had a bunch of examples of this particular artist on my shelf, I could open up all of them and go, I don't like any of this artwork because I don't like the style. It's not something that appeals to me. But I could also look at it and go, well, the lines are wrong here. So, you know, there's a difference of there. I will purposely try to make it like, look, I didn't like the art in this because I didn't like all of the art in this, as opposed to, it was all right, but there were a couple of panels that were really particularly shitty. So at least I know I'm trying to like, plus I'm not an art guy anyways, so I always find it hard to talk on that subject to begin with in terms of technicality. So
I get it.
Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Before I was going to tangentialize before we wrap up real quick. I thought it was ironic that you mentioned the Marvels, since I had been thinking about the Marvels this week.
Oh, yeah. Because I've watched the Marvels. That's one of the things I've watched.
Yeah, lately. That was on his Chad's list of things that he checked off.
Also, along the lines of connecting back to something we just said a minute ago, irrational fanboys losing their fucking mind online. Yeah, about
see,
something.
But see,
I'm not saying they were all wrong.
The only thing about this, which is one of the reasons why I just wanted to mention it real quick, that your general description of the movie was accurate, which is what I said when it came. Like, it's okay. It's not horrible. It's not great. You can see how the movie being cut up and put back together again in the editing process screwed it up. The only thing that bothered me was you kind of like, not that you necessarily said it, but someone could interpret that as like you were like almost trying to blame the quote unquote, and you're a little easy to embrace the troll term, which I don't like, but that's just me. But you kind of almost imply that had factored into how the movie really did, when I don't think the trolls, quote unquote, had anything to do with the way that movie performed, because they didn't want it to work. They didn't want people to go see it. They wanted it to tank. But if people liked it, it would have tanked.
True. But I don't think I was thinking too much about the performance when I said what I said. I could see how you got it from what I said, but actually I didn't mention it to you, but it's got to be Rotten Tomatoes, right? Because is that where, well, Fandango at home now, but is that where Vudu gets its ratings information from?
I'm not sure where Vudu does. They could get.
If you look at the Marvels on Vudu, it actually has a better score than I thought it would going into it, which I thought was a little strange, because I made note of that. I was like, wait, what? I thought this movie was supposed to be shit to everybody, right? So like, if I'm clicking on it right now, I'm in Vudu. Yes. Okay. So yeah, it's gotta be Rotten Tomatoes, cause there's a tomato icon. So the tomato icon has
62, 82.
Yeah. The audience score is 82. So I remember seeing that on Vudu and going like, wait, what? I thought this was supposed to be a shit movie compared, you know? So, that shocked me going into it.
The Marvels fail for three basic reasons. First of all, and again, I'm using the same way I used it before, nobody gave a shit about that project when it was announced. That's the way it was conceived, the way we knew we were getting it, nobody cared about it. So it's kind of like how Solo, a Star Wars story, failed, part of the reason, because nobody wanted a Han Solo movie without Harrison Ford at that time. So that was one reason. It failed because, like most of Phases 4 and 5, not all, but most, if you actually watch the movie, it's pretty inconsequential. The ending, even the post-credit scene, which we know they reworked, the ending is somewhat consequential conceptually, but it's not a movie you needed to see. And if you missed it, it wasn't going to have any impact on your understanding of the MCU going forward or the next project. And then ultimately, much like Solo, it was the fact that this was a microcosm, a perfect storm of everybody's dissatisfaction with where the MCU was. And it all boiled. It came down to one moment when people said, I don't want to see it. I'm not going to see it. And when the reviews came out, the critics, they said it sucked. It's like, well, it just reinforced. So those were the main reasons. There were a bunch of people that didn't want people to go see it. They were hoping it was going to tank. But a lot of those same people wanted the Captain Marvel to tank. The reason that didn't tank was because it came out right before Endgame. And because it was a blank slate, people thought it could still be good. People thought the character could still be interesting. And obviously, Carol Danvers in this movie is much better than we got in the original Captain Marvel. All the characters were fine. It just was poorly conceived. And they were counting on two TV actresses from shows that people either watched in WandaVision, but had been like two years since they had seen her. And Iman Vellani, who is great, but nobody ever watched her show. So it was a very poorly conceived project. But I think Iman Vellani caught way too. She still catches hell, which I don't understand. She's one of the best things from Phases 4 and 5 because she's smart. She's enthusiastic. She's appealing. Her character's fine. Her family's cool. It just wasn't an interesting project. So that was, but I was thinking about it even before you posted, because I went back and I started watching it the other night. Last night, actually, I think I fell asleep on it, but I do like it. It's just inconsequential. And I think that hurts a lot of Phases 4 and 5, but no, did it deserve as much hate? No, but it's not surprising the movie didn't make any money because there wasn't an interest in the project.
Yeah.
Like the Eternals made more money, but nobody was interested in that project either. And that's one of the things. That's where, you know, putting the cart before the horse, thinking, like we talked about, throw it against the wall and make it stick. But that doesn't always work.
Yeah. I also recently, did I tell you I watched Way of Water the other day?
No, I don't think you did.
Yeah, I finally watched that as well. It definitely, it fits perfectly with the first one, I think. I think it captures the feel of Pandora. Again, I don't know about where we're heading with this. I don't know about making a whole franchise out of this, but my god, was that movie longer than it should have been?
Yeah, it was.
But whatever, we don't have to.
Did pick up though. Did pick up.
Did.
Yeah.
It did. Yeah, for sure. It definitely did some more world building too, which was nice. You know, it would be pretty old, honestly. You know, thinking about it, what we're supposed to get 5 movies out of this franchise at the end of the day.
At least, yeah.
At least, if we were to stay in the forest within the same, I don't know, 100-mile radius or so, or whatever like that, on this planet, then yeah, that would be a little a little pain in the ass. So at least it's starting to explore the world, so that was cool. But
I enjoyed it for what it was. I will openly admit that when they were hunting the whale things and they were doing that I almost thought that was gratuitous at that point, where it's like that literally was being put in the movie just because you knew it was going to kind of get a visceral reaction out of the audience in a negative way. And that's how I reacted to it. I actually had a really strong reaction saying, like, who would find this entertaining?
Yeah.
That I even said that to my friend, it's so gratuitous it's so manipulative of the, manipulative to do that, that it bothered me. I thought it was okay. It would be really curious to see how the next one does, because we know the 10-year gap between the first one and the second one, or the fourth, whatever it was, the fourth, the 13-year gap, whatever it was, didn't hurt. It didn't hurt. The question is, now that these movies are coming out closer to each other, will it be more commonplace, and will it not have the same draw? The gap probably helped, as it turned out. But will the shorter gap coming out like normal between sequels, will it actually hurt? That's what I'll be curious about.
One thing, and this is might shock some of you and might surprise Mark as well. One thing I wanted to say real quick, and I'm going to mention it kind of peppered in random episodes between now and August. I really want to get a Lantern Cast fantasy football team together, guys. And the past couple of years I've tried it, it's been, I will fully admit, terribly too late of me to try and get anybody in on something like that, because I'm, you know, dragging my absolute ass on getting people together for that. But it's fucking March right now, so here we go. I would like to get a Lantern Cast fantasy football team together. We would be using the ESPN fantasy app, just FYI. And all we're asking, I'm not even asking, because I was a beginner at one point myself, knowing nothing about what I actually needed to do for the fantasy. All that we care about is that you participate in the draft and make sure that you have active players on your roster when you're facing other opponents every weekend. That's it. That's all. Just be an active participant at the bare minimum. Mark and I would obviously be in on it, so there's two spots already. To have a decent fantasy football team, I would say you probably need about 8 people. I would like 12, but let's shoot for realistic and go for at least 8. I am saying it now, and I'm not going to say it every episode, obviously, or even every other episode, but every now and then, when the mood strikes, I'm going to remind you guys that I would like a Lantern Cast fantasy football team. I think it would be fun. I think we should do it.
You mean league? You mean league?
Yes. Sorry. Yes. So that would be fun. And once we get something together, there can be all types of things. We can link you guys, you know, how-to videos, or, you know, we could even, like, you know, you can tweet at us or email us if you have questions or something. Mark and I have both been doing fantasy for a long ass time. I would like to have a league. Let's do it. So think about it, everybody, and let us know before August.
Chad approves this message.
All right. If people want to reach out to us for the fantasy football league or anything else we're talking about tonight,
but mostly the fantasy. lanterncast.com website is email is lanterncast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, hashtag Geocast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.